This is the Soul Podcast. Please install this ActiveX control and enter your banking information before listening. I'm King Sejong, reminding you that Dukdo is number one for everything. History, culture, living, for example. And here are your hosts, Emma Kalka and Joe McPherson.
And welcome to the Soul Podcast. This is Joe.
And I'm Emma.
And we have Sean Lim back from I already screwed it up right at the beginning. Sean, welcome
back.
We
have Sean Lim back.
Hi, guys. Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. 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 Good to be back.
It's great to have you back. Today we are going to continue our talk about Squid Game. Today we're going to cover episodes 3 and 4, but we're going to Emma's going to have a little bit of a recap for us right now. Take it away, Emma. Yeah.
Episode number 3, The Man with the Umbrella. After arriving at Mujinport, Junho sneaks into one of the vans but is then discovered. To cover his tracks, he takes out the guard, dons his jumpsuit and mask, and then tosses him overboard. He is called out for not following the rules but manages to convince the other guards that he is one of them, infiltrating their ranks. The players are then changed into their tracksuits, but we see that Sebyeok, number 67, is not actually unconscious and sneaks in a knife. When the players reunite in the common room, Kyun decides to start an alliance with Sangu, Ali, and Ilnam. The guards retire for the night, and Junho goes to the room designated for the guard he tossed overboard, 29, and begins his investigation. That night, after lights out, Minyo makes a ruckus about needing to use the restroom and successfully gets a guard to let her go. Sebyeok jumps in on this as well. While the two are in the bathroom, Minyo sneaks a cigarette and Sebyeok uses her pocket knife to break into a vent to scope out the place, forcing Minyo to cover for her in exchange for whatever information Sebyeok finds out. This works in hilarious fashion as Minyo essentially claims that she shit herself. While up in the vent, Sebyeok sees the guards melting down sugar. However, alone, that knowledge doesn't give her much to go off of. When the two return to the common room, Sangu overhears their conversation, surmising that Sebyeok knows something. The next morning at breakfast, player 111 gets a piece of paper in his food, which he reads and then eats. On the way to the next game, Sangu trails Sebyeok and tells her that if she shares with him what she saw, he can help. She shares what she saw with him as the others attempt to guess what the next game will be. When they arrive at what looks to be an oversized playground, they are asked to choose one of four shapes to stand in front of: a circle, triangle, star, and umbrella. The suggestion is put out that the team should all choose the same shape, but Sangu suggests they should all choose different ones. At this point, Sangu now understands what the game is, but doesn't share it with the other members of his team because he's an asshole. Sangu chooses the triangle, while Ali goes with the circle, and Ilnam chooses the star. Ki-hoon chooses the umbrella, and for a moment, Sangu appears to stop him, but then doesn't because he's still an asshole. Sebyeok follows Sangu to the triangle. It is then revealed that they are doing the honeycomb game, where they must carve out the shape in the crystallized sugar with a needle without breaking the shape. Sangu and Sebyeok succeed easily along with Ali. Those who don't are shot in the head. Among the remaining people, Minyo secretly heats the needle with a lighter she brought to smoke to complete the star shape, then secretly delivers the lighter to Doksu to curry favor. He also passes. Meanwhile, in a moment of desperation, Ki-hoon discovers that his sweat melts the sugar, and using this knowledge, figures that if he licks the back of the dalgona, the seam will melt first, allowing the shape to fall out. He begins frantically licking, which inspires everyone around him to do the same, including Ilnam. With just 10 seconds left, both Ki-hoon and Ilnam pass. At the same time, Junho has been observing the whole game as a guard, but is then told that his job is to dispose of the dead and is chastised. Seriously, this guy has like 9 lives. He's then told to do his job and meet with another guard later. A riot then breaks out when one player cannot fathom losing. He stabs a guard with the needle and then takes him hostage with his own gun, forcing the guard to remove his mask. Upon seeing it is a young man, the player then shoots himself. The guard is then executed for disobeying rules and taking his mask off. Junho secretly takes the murdered guard's mask for himself. Episode number 4, Stick to the Team. The organizers hand out food to the players, but it is a measly boiled egg and a bottle of cider. Still hungry, Doksu's gang, at the suggestion of Minyo, who is trying to prove she can play with the big boys, cut back in line to get seconds. As a result, 5 people are left without food and complain. This starts a fight between a player and Doksu, who then beats him to death. While Kiyun protests, nothing happens to Doksu, and instead more money is put into the pot, showing the other players that they will not be punished for killing each other, and that it would be to their benefit to kill others, as if this game wasn't effed up enough. Meanwhile, Junho, who is either the world's best detective or the luckiest one, follows another guard to where they dispose of the bodies. He puts on the mask he stole after the last game and walks off, pretending to be a higher rank. As a result, he misses out on discovering a group of guards taking advantage of the large number of corpses to line their own pockets in the Oregon black market with the help of player 111, who is a doctor. In exchange, he is told the next game, which in this case, he is informed that he must survive the night, as the sick mind who put all this together has instigated a bloodbath during Lights Out. He is told to stick with the strongest man. This ends up being Doksu, whom player 111 bargains with as soon as he gets back to the room, using his knowledge of the next game to buy his own safety. Kiyun's crew agrees to a meetup spot should shit go down. When the lights go out, all hell breaks loose as Doksu's gang proceeds to slaughter anyone they can get their hands on. In the chaos, Kiyun attempts to locate his team but cannot find Il-Nam. They help to protect each other, and the scene that puts the Red Wedding to shame ends when Il-Nam, who has climbed to the highest bunk, shouts out for this killing to stop. The front man declares the game over and intervenes. A total of 27 were killed in the slaughter, and while the guards are cleaning up the bodies, Junho sneaks up to Ki-hoon asking if he's seen Hwang In-ho, to which Ki-hoon replies, "We don't know each other's names." Kiyun's team then decides it's time that they know each other's names, which, I mean, I guess I understand why names were not a priority. They exchange names, but when they get to Il-Nam, he appears to have forgotten. Kiyun then cheerfully covers for him. On the other side of the room, Dr. Deadbody sews up Doksu's wounds, after which Minyo and Doksu sneak off to hook up in the bathroom. How romantic. They then promise to go all the way to the end together. Seriously, girl, don't believe him. Come on. Oh, and they exchange names because that seems like the thing to do at the moment. Junho retires to his room and starts jotting down his notes of the day when he realizes the strange noise he heard before is actually Morse code. Magically, he seems to know what this means and translates it to number 29, the room he's currently staying in. The next morning, the next official game commences with the players being told to form teams of 10. Assuming they are at a disadvantage with an old man and a woman among their ranks, Sang-woo orders everyone to go find one more person, preferably a man. Doksu, being the little cheat that he is, kicks Minyo off the team, as if we needed another reason to hate him. He then forms a team of only strong men. Sang-woo tries to get a man, but turns him down when he asks if his wife can join them, proving he's still got some asshole vibes going on, even though I kind of get it in this situation. When the teams are finalized, Team Underdog, as I should now call it, is still at a disadvantage with an old man and now 3 women. Minyo has inserted herself onto the team in loud fashion. Seriously, you don't need Doksu, girl. And Sebyok brought back another woman, player 240, who I think is Sebyok's soulmate. They are taken into another room, and we all learn that they are playing tug of war. Team Underdog is immediately worried. The guards randomly draw numbers, and Team 1 and 7 go first, with Team 1 being Doksu's team. They win easily, and Team 7 is left literally hanging by a thread, which is then severed by a guillotine, plummeting them to their deaths. Team Underdog is up next against Team 5, and they immediately begin to lament that they are done for. However, Il-Nam, ever the MVP, says that he learned as a young boy how to win at tug-of-war, even against bigger opponents, boosting the team's morale. He walks them through his strategy, which they follow, thank God, giving them the early advantage. However, the other team quickly recovers, and Team Underdog begins to lose ground. At this time, Sang-woo manages to keep his wits about him, shouting out for the team to move forward 3 steps together on his count. As they do so, the screen goes black because the creators of the show are obviously sadists. or just want everyone to binge the entire season in one go? Probably both.
And thank you, Emma, for that lovely, snarky recap.
Just had some fun with it, you know.
All right. So we have, again, we have the Soul Light, Sean Lim here, from YouTube's The Soul Light. You're also a podcast as well. We can get you on Apple Podcasts, correct? And all that stuff.
Oh, no podcast no? yet. I did have one podcast a long time ago, but I folded that.
That's fine. Because your YouTube is really cool.
Thank you.
Really cool. But you did do an episode about Squid Game. Would you mind just give us the elevator pitch of what your thoughts were?
That we basically have been playing a Squid Game in Korea for decades. Wow. That it may have been a commentary of society now, but even still, like we've heard from the director, he had written the script 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So already it's been in our past, and he's probably already been reflecting upon like the indications of what he's been seeing in society before then. But the actual specifics, maybe with the way that the economy was going, is pretty much now. But the tensions, the way that people treat each other, the viciousness, the way that society is just kind of like this game of like brother versus brother, and just like a little bit of the callousness. I think it really does portray this post-Korean War society. And the reason why I said that is because it's more reflective to me. When I saw it, it felt reflective because the games are old. These are old games from the old man's perspective. And so he's kind of putting these people in this situation of like making them fight. And it kind of reminded me of like how it was just like this rough and tumble world after the war. People were just trying to get their hands on money or power or anything. And these were the people who end up in the Squid Game that probably didn't end up on the winning end of it. That's why it's sad. But you could say that the people who pretty much had the same wild, wild west mentality and viciousness probably are running our, you know, top 20 conglomerates.
Yeah.
They're just on the winning end.
Yeah. It's shown that the winners, you don't necessarily win because you're the strongest or the most gifted. It's because you play the dirtiest.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah. I mean, it seemed totally a Marxian angles, even a metaphor for capitalist society, for a free, capitalist society. Yeah. Even some Thomas Malthus in there about, how you need to keep everyone at a subsistence level of survival, in order to keep the economy going. To me, it's always been, this is what was the most fascinating thing for me, and I didn't say this last week, was it went into the metaphor too, all the way down to when they were taking the vote to quit the game. As in, this is the metaphor for like, this is your chance to get rid of this system.
Yes. And yet he knew that they wouldn't.
Yeah. Like, because
they were going to come
really
back.
Walk away.
This is how society is. It's like, you know, your chance of winning that big pig in life is so slim, but you'd rather risk dying. To get that.
Then not even try at all.
Yeah.
And also it shows that actually the people who complain about the system also have a responsibility for its continuation. Because in Korea, we're continually trapped in it because if you're not working at Samsung or for one of the top conglomerates, you may complain and really say bad things about it. But the moment your kid or grandkid gets a job there, you're like, hallelujah. So, you know, you have to have a little bit of consistency there. If you're basically exposing yourself as just selfish. Like, if I can't have it, then I'm complaining about it. But if I have it, then screw anyone else who doesn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are going to participate in that, no matter whether you're on the winning side or on the losing side, you're still upholding it. So everybody has a part to play in whether it continues or not. And so even the people who say like, oh, we're like, you know, we're like kind of on the losing end of this. If you go back to that game, then you're just as bad as the one who's operating the game.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. the lesson from the Matthew Broderick movie and Ali Sheedy movie War Games is the best way to win is not to play.
Exactly. Exactly. Because that was the test of course, like we all kind of maybe get blinded by Mr. Kong Yu's beauty when he is there, but he is essentially filtering people to play the game, right? And so yeah. Already in that message right there is that these people want to play the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I was just curious because like, especially, I think it was the third episode, right? It was one of these two episodes. You know, we go behind the scenes and like the guy in the black mask is like, keep an eye on the people who didn't come back.
Exactly. That was the creepiest because they mm-hmm. knew. And like they predicted it so well. And then you know, it wasn't really fair because they were saying like, oh, this is supposed to be like the fair shot, the last fair shot before they die. Mm-hmm. But they were going to the implication was if they didn't come back, then they were just going to. They were just going to round them up and probably silence or kill them anyway.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, creeps. I don't.
Because yeah. they can't expose the location or like what they saw. Or, like,
and they can't skip any games. They can't skip the games or unless they're going to do some makeup games for the crowd.
Yeah. Makeup test.
Could you imagine? I can't even imagine. Like, you're just like, you know what? F this. I'm out. I'm going to figure my own way out of my debt. Yeah. And then you're just going about and like life is still pretty shitty because you're still horribly in debt and trying to figure a way out. And then suddenly they show up again and they're like, nope, you're back in. Like,
you're back in. And well, also you don't completely know the rules ahead of time. Some people mm-hmm. learn the rules ahead of time and are able to get ahead. By people on the inside.
Cheats.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, they try to make it seem like it's fair. The organizers try to make it seem like it's fair, and I would say the organizers would. I mean, the metaphor would be the philosophers, the people who came up with the system and the Bibles of the system in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I just lost my train of thought. I always do.
And actually, like from some of the reactions that I've seen, that still bother me, I guess, of real Korean societies, like when people are saying like, is there a real metaphor in Korean life? And they're saying like about how whether this is a fair society that we live in, people are saying like, yeah, I feel like this is a similar situation of how I'm living my life in Korea, where I feel like I'm following all the rules. But even if I follow all the rules, is this a really a fair game? Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're still wondering whether it's still fair, it still blows my mind because obviously it's not.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
Not. It's yeah, I mean, not
and this goes beyond Korea because you're kind of paraphrasing exactly what Bill Clinton's campaign stump speech was in 1992. Was you've all been playing by the rules and you're all losing the game. That's what his stump speech was.
Exactly. And then how can it be fair when part of the game was they deliberately turned off the lights when you went to sleep so that you could kill each other?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Oh,
I mean, if you still have to ask whether that's a fair game, I mean, maybe you deserve to be on that island. I don't know.
Yeah, and some kinds like sometimes you start thinking like some of these people kind of deserve to be on there, and that they do that, and it's also saying like the great equalizer is debt.
The great equalizer for the people there.
Well, it just seems like in society, the great equal, no matter how you know, even if you went to SNU,
you can still find yourself in a lot. You still find
as much debt as everyone else, because there's so many people that are rushing so hard to sell Keeping Up with the Kims, trying so hard to get that apartment to look nice, that nice car. None of this they can afford. So my wife just got off the phone with an old friend of hers. I mean, they only worked together for a few months back in 2006, 2007. And so for some reason, they've kept in touch this whole time. And I've been watching her friend's path through life in Korea, and she's been doing kind of everything that you think that just that stereotype of how everything's supposed to go. She's like, she decided to get married. So she married a guy she'd only dated a month.
Oh, that was a setup. That was like a sogeting or like,
yeah, she just didn't really think too hard. She's just like, okay, we're just going to get married. Turns out the guy is, he's kind of like, the father from Parasite, or actually like Gi-hun, kept putting all their savings and all their monies and all these, stupid schemes and losing it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hadn't talked in a while, so got off the phone with her, and she says, yeah, they just bought themselves an apartment, and they bought it with $850,000. I'm like,
wow.
I've been hearing about how their lives have been going and how that guy, the husband, is kind of a you know, a scheme of the week type of dude. When are you ever going to pay off $850,000? When?
Well, I guess they'll just wait for the apartment price to double, and then they'll just like pay it off, like, and then you know, maybe sell it or something.
You know, if that
gambling on,
if that long predicted bubble does pop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then who knows what's going to happen. But in a way, for the, I think there was one moral out with this script where when you were saying like debt is the great equalizer, I'm trying to recall, like, were there any characters who were there because of debts that they got into that it seemed like they didn't deserve? Because I mean, think
Ali. The way that.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Oh, well, yeah, I think that's kind of well, he kind of ran away from his pro. He should have just booked a ticket too. But
he couldn't afford a ticket for all three of them. He could only,
yeah, that's why he went back. He could afford his wife and kid to send them back, but he couldn't afford a ticket for himself. Yeah. So I think that was his reasoning for going back.
For going, pointed before, okay. That was a very unrealistic part because migrant workers don't bring their families.
Interesting. Yeah, so maybe his was a little bit weird, but like the other characters seemed like they all kind of had like that impulse that got them into trouble.
Yeah, it was self-imposed.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you could make an argument for Sebyeok, the North Korean refugee, because her debts were because she was paying off a trafficker to basically get her and her brother and then the rest of her family. Yeah. So her reasoning for going back was because she met with the guy, the coyote, I guess. I'm not sure I'm not sure what they call him in Korean, but.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's kind of like what, like a Mexico type of thing.
That was like a very American reference there.
Korea, I think they're called coyote.
Don't shit with me right now. no, but yeah, she goes to meet with them and she ends up making the decision to go back because she needs that's more money true. To get the rest that's of her true. Family out. And she meets with her little brother and he's like, I really miss our mom and dad.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, that wasn't really debt, was it?
That wasn't really debt. That was just money she
it's
needed.
Not so
she
much
just
debt.
Needed some money.
Yeah.
It's people in desperate situations, I guess.
And she's willing to risk it all. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it kind of shows like what people were willing to do in Korea, like throughout the decades. Like it's essentially that, like she needs like some cash like that she has no access to for like a huge reason. But what I was like really struck by is like when Lee Jung-jae was like trying to get that doll out of that claw machine, and that little kid was saying like, look, you can't just do it without any strategy. You have to think while you're trying to use, you know, play this game.
Oh, foreshadowing.
Got the girls.
And so that's the thing, like where I feel like that's how a lot of these people got into this problem. with a debt, and they ended up in this game, even though not everybody. So yeah, that's what I was asking. I was like, were there people who are not?
But wait, I'm trying to remember, what was the old dude in the game for?
Which
oh my God, Emma still hasn't finished.
Oh, you haven't finished the move, the whole series?
I'm still working on it. It takes me time. I have to take breaks, and I've been busy.
Oh no, no, we're just saying that.
Because, I'm so scared now because we're progressing to a point where we're gonna have to say some spoilers.
We all
It's fine. You have my permission to give me spoilers. I'm probably going to need them.
Because... You'll find out near the end why he's in the game.
No, you're not. You're gonna. Well, if I don't know what kind of a person you are.
Honestly, I had some time today to watch ahead, and I was like, okay, you can do this, Emma. You can do this. And then I was like, or I could make pasties for my burlesque show this weekend. Okay. I'm like, yeah, let's do that.
That was would you want to promote your burlesque show while we're here?
Oh yeah, come to the studio in HVC on Saturday.
The studio is the name of a place.
Yeah, it's the name of a place. Come watch Halloween Burlesque. Anyway, back on task. Yeah, no, it's fine. But as of right now, episode 3 and 4, we still think that he's there because he's got brain tumors.
Well, he also said he was in debt. That's right.
Because
the story was that he's in debt, right?
Yeah. Oh, the story is.
I'm assuming it's because of medical bills. But from the way you two reacted, I'm like, oh God. No, he's gonna
usually I'm a person where just like, I don't care what you tell me about the ending. You can totally tell me a spoiler because it's more about like how they get to the end.
But this is one of the things where you guys, we are not saying this because Emma's gonna
this is one of those things where you want to watch it a second time after watching the ending.
Dude, I barely made it through the first time.
Everything.
I'm like halfway through episode 5.
Everything everyone says means something different the second time you watch it. How about that?
Okay, and this is true. Because I will say, being where I am and then looking back at episode 1, like when you mentioned like the kid at the... at the claw game saying like it's all about strategy, and I'm like,
that's smart. I didn't
that's
catch
foreshadowing
that
I see I that now that. I wish I had remembered that line. I didn't. I was just too thrown off because not long after that, tons of people were gunned down trying to play red light green light.
Exactly, without thinking. But the point that I also made in like my other YouTube video is that strategy or that kind of mindset actually did work for a while in Korea. Mm-hmm. And so these people are being punished for it now, but other people who did go crazy like that, they just like, you just needed to show up first and just like run across anywhere and like stake your claim. And then because there was nothing, there would always be some growth. So like you just bought an apartment anywhere, it would go up in price, but now you can't do that. So these people are still trying to play that game, but that game is past.
That's
and then
another
the young
good
kids
one.
they know that game doesn't work or is not in existence, so they don't start at that point. But these old people, they haven't Lee Jung Jae, he's old now, but he hasn't been able to transition.
They're still trying to get an apartment at Richinzia.
Yeah. Oh, in Hanamdong?
just you know, they're making fun of... You've read those articles about how younger Koreans are kind of embarrassed by the names of the types of apartment complexes their parents want to go in. Just the ostentatious names, so like Richinzia.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would just stick to villas.
Yeah.
But I'm going back. I'm going to Miami, so I'm not sure if I have much room.
Oh, so you decided it's Miami, not Texas.
Oh, no, we had decided. It changed.
Oh.
Reasons outside of my control, but it's now Miami. I'm now adjusting to Miami.
Miami sounds cool.
I mean, beach.
Mm-hmm.
I can go to the beach every weekend. You want to come visit, Sean?
Of course, I'd love to. And it's so weird for me in as a Californian to go, when I went to Miami, is that the coast is on the other side,
the opposite side.
Yeah, you watch the sunrise, not the sunset.
And then also, I can
take you to the other side of the peninsula too. I used to live on that side.
I always knew, like, if I had the ocean to my left and I was walking, I'd be walking north.
No, it's not.
The opposite.
It's the opposite.
Yeah.
On the other side. So it's kind of funky. This is weird.
Yeah.
It's odd to get used to. I guess.
But the water is much nicer there in Miami than California. Is it?
I thought there'd be more jellyfish.
Probably, anyway. But the water's warmer. Anyway.
I'm from that area. I'm not from Miami. I'm from the northern part
Gulf Coast.
Of Mexico. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Back to Squid Game.
Yeah, I was going to point out another way that we show that this is really a fantasy is we do have a proactive, competent police officer.
I saw that note and I started laughing because in my head, like, I'm watching him and I'm like, how is this guy not getting caught by the other people?
and Sean, I'm glad to have you on this week because we know how you feel about this.
Well, I actually have been more neutral to pro police before this recent Son Jung-min case. Mm-hmm. Because I believe in balance of power, and I've seen how
the
prosecution has abused its power. So when the police have long been arguing that they should also have a balance of power, especially in investigative rights, I said, like, good. Why don't they deserve also some respect? But at least from what we've seen from that case, that respect has to be earned back, I think, in droves.
Yeah.
But what I have heard from secondary evidence is that when you go into any kind of police department, it's like half-half. Half are just like rotten and half are good. So depends on which half. So maybe he comes from the good half.
Yeah. Okay. So like half are like the guys that left Kyun out of the station when he tried to report his crime. And the other half are Juno, who I still feel is like a cat with nine lives.
Who skips out on work to find his bro.
Yeah, right. Also, yeah, right. So what's he doing? And then
he literally kills a guy to sneak his way into the game.
Just to steal his clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to steal his clothes. He couldn't knock him out. I mean,
at the time he doesn't know what's going on. They don't know. He doesn't know anyone's killing anyone. He's the first. He did first blood.
Yeah, this is true. But I guess you could argue like, oh, that guy's not dead. He's just sleeping. But his head was in the water for a long time. So I was like, this is probably dead. Probably dead.
Oh, yeah. And he turns up later dead.
He's dead.
He's so, for sure dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So just in the very beginning, like this was.
This was
at the beginning of episode three.
Beginning of episode three. Because I just rewatched.
Yeah. They were like, in the ferry.
Stranglehold.
Yeah.
Well, and like poor guy, because he didn't know they had microchips in their necks. He's like, yeah, I'll just sneak in.
Right. So, but I thought that I think from your notes, you're saying like, oh, he kind of like in a maze to nowhere. But I do appreciate his point of view because we need his point of view because psychologically we need somebody there to feel like there's somebody who's going to buck the system. And then also he takes us behind the scenes into areas where we don't have access to.
No, that's what it was. He was just kind of an access to about what's happening behind the scenes, but there was the plot still just, sorry, Emma, it didn't go anywhere.
I'm rooting for him.
Brother.
Okay. Well, he might succeed in doing that, but
it just takes him a long time to try to find his brother. Like a really,
which
really,
raises,
really
which
long
raises,
time.
Which raises even more questions.
Which also might be more true to form with the way that the police investigate. It takes them a long, long time to find anything.
Well, and it didn't help that it wasn't until like episode four where people are like, hey, maybe we should know each other's names.
Oh, yeah, that's
among the players. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, I mean, I keep forgetting that because we as the viewer, we know everybody's names because we're introduced to their backstories in episode two.
And if you're watching the subtitles, they sometimes put up their names. And Mike, by the way, don't do the closed caption English subtitles. Use the other English subtitles.
That's what I use. I use the actual
subtitles. What I did the first time was I did have the subtitles with Korean audio. I'm doing it the other way around on my rewatches. I wanted to hear what the dub sounded like while looking at the Korean subtitles.
Oh, I didn't hear that. How is the dubbing?
It honestly,
I think the people who are complaining about it have never watched anime.
Okay, so it has that sound.
It has that. Have you ever seen? I'm going to really date myself. If you know Homestar Runner and Strong Bad Emails, and there's one they're talking about Japanese cartoons. Runner. Yeah, and Homestar comes in talking like Japanese anime. It's like, hey guys, I want to be the guy. It's kind of like they talk like this, and we're all going to have our Sunny D.
Oh, I think they're all American voice actors.
Well, but they're Korean American, mm-hmm. I've heard.
Yeah, that's they're. I'm not sure if they're all Korean American, but they're all definitely Asian American.
Well,
I might know some of them.
Ali does have a Central Asian accent in it as well.
Oh, that is true. Yeah. I wasn't too bothered by, because I would switch back and forth between only the English subs and then English subs with the English dubs. Just because there were some moments where it's just flipping chaos and I'm so like, what the hell am I supposed to be watching? Yeah. So I would turn on the dubs because for me, I'm one of those people that sometimes it's hard for me to focus. Mm-hmm. So I had to put the English dubs on so I would know what was going on because I'm just like too all over the place to be able to pay attention to just the subtitles. So especially mm-hmm. like during the night slaughter, which is like, you know, Red Wedding times 10, I guess. I had to put on, even though it was basically just people shouting at each other, I had to put the dubs on because, you know, there's flashing lights, people are like hitting each other, and it's kind of hard in general just to keep up with what's going on.
Yeah, the strobe lights, man.
Yeah, and the strobe, definitely with the strobe lights, I was like, I got to put this English, I had to go back to the beginning, put the English dub on because I was just like, huh?
Oh yeah. Honestly, I was able to understand a lot more when I put the dub on because I was just like trying to read the subtitle so much, and they're trying to put in so much stuff that's happening simultaneously in one line of text.
Well, and the dubs have like the accurate level of cursing in it. I think is with the actual Korean with what they're saying. Because English subtitles kind of dumbed it down a bit.
And honestly, the acting in the dubs, I don't think it was so bad. I think it was perfectly fine. There's really good good acting parts. They emoted pretty well.
I felt they matched like the actual Korean voices because I mean, with a lot of Korean dramas, especially you get like that kind of over the top.
Yeah,
sort of acting. So I felt like it matched it a bit.
They did the hardest thing too. They were matching the flaps too. Do you understand what that means?
That is true. Yeah, it wasn't like. Yeah, they did match their mouths pretty well. Yeah. I was kind of like, not bad.
That's hard.
Could have been worse. Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, that mother from Gilmore Girls was there. Was one of the voices.
Oh, she's one of the voices.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Wait, is she Minyo?
I don't know. Emily Kuroda. She's listed in IMDb, so
that's cool. Okay, now I'm gonna like go back and I'm gonna put the dub on and be like, which one is she?
That was Minyo, which is like Han Minyo, which I my bad translation is one pretty girl, one pretty lady.
Oh yeah, probably yeah.
I've noticed everyone has kind of a funny name because if you call the old man's name, it's Il Nam
001.
Well, he's Oil Man.
Oh, okay.
And then we have River Dawn.
River Dawn.
Oh, okay.
Which is a great stripper name. It's a stripper name. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, I was just finding these things and I like calling Oil Nam Oil Man because it makes sense.
I just call him Old Dude when I forget his name. He's like, Old Dude.
Yeah.
Where are you?
And, yeah, he says some stuff that really, yeah. Okay, so people are always bringing up about the translations and such. We
discussed that in depth last episode.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
With Michael Hurt, who did the
that was my warning to please don't go back into that too much.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I mean, well, unless Sean has opinions on the translations.
It didn't jar me as much as I think other people.
No, I think the people that are complaining about it, A, they don't live in Korea, and they're not used to seeing subtitles and audio on two languages they understand, it feels like.
Hmm.
And it's like, if you've ever watched Hollywood movies in a Korean theater, if you ever watched Star Wars, man, and you see the Korean subtitles, they're
right. It's very simplified.
It's Cliff's Notes of what they're saying.
Right.
Yeah. That's how it goes.
It could always be better.
Yeah. It could be better. But what they were complaining about was like, they don't know the cultural connotation of using Oppa and Ajumma. And what she was trying to say.
I just like recently just flipped through it and they used the word babe.
Yeah, that's what I saw. She was calling him babe instead of oppa. She was like babe.
Which I felt was actually a step up. Like that's an upgrade.
I think that's fine.
That has more of a connotation than I think
matches up with a
translation would be if it was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, there's one time when Doksu first and Minyo first talked to each other, he calls her Ajumma, and he's just like trying to poke at her because he's trying to. Sebyeok are trying to, you know, they're with the gang, and Minyo is trying to get in the gang, and he calls her Ajumma, and that's why she got so defensive and talking about, hey, you want someone with me rather than this skinny girl over here. She's pointing out I might be Ajumma, but then again, I'm Ajumma.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm Madame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lady. Yeah, you just have to say lady. I think that would have worked.
I'm lady.
Well, I don't know if she's a lady, but.
Well, she ain't no lady. Oh, no, no. I like. Have you watched the honest trailers of Squid Game?
The link that you sent me a little bit.
Oh, okay.
You told me not to watch it till I finish.
I've watched it three times.
I'm gonna try and finish, and then I'll watch it.
I've cried laughing three times because they like said all the stuff that annoyed me about the plot they point out very much. But the best one ever is how they describe Han Min-yo. She's basically the Ajumma Nicolas Cage.
Right. I didn't really see that, but I could see that.
Yes.
Why does that tickle you so much?
It's because funny because it made
kind of like an American audience thing. I think
it made sense to me. But Nicolas Cage is the king of like the bulging eyes type of acting.
Okay.
Like right. No, the bees, not the bees, and it's over the top. I am going to like Tasmanian Devil this entire performance.
It's just like before I got to Nicolas Cage, I just was reminded of a lady I worked with in the office.
We all know that lady, right?
We all know that lady.
There's always this, the one.
Honestly,
the one.
The more I
didn't
watch
even
her...
need to go to Nicolas Cage.
She's like, that's so and so.
Yeah, I know. But I like the way how Americans who aren't even. You know, they don't have any connection. They don't get the subtext of this. How they're seeing it through their eyes, and it's like, oh yeah, that's if Nicolas Cage was a Korean lady.
I was like, oh okay, yeah, I could see it. But I was like,
yeah,
oh,
but
okay.
For us over now here in Seoul, we're all like, oh god, that's so and so.
It's like, yeah, oh, that
they channeled her for this.
This
just goes. There's always that one in every office. There's a Min-yo in every office. Mm-hmm.
This is what scares me though, is the more I watch a performance, the more I am deathly attracted to her. What does that say about me?
I don't know.
What the type of women I'm attracted to.
No, that's obviously
she's a go-getter.
Yeah. That was of that generation, she is exactly what she said, you know, you want to be with someone like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is kind of true.
And I think I think that was sexual connotation in that. You want to be someone with me rather than this bony girl. Someone who knows what they're doing.
Well, yeah, obviously that's part of it. It depends on who she's talking to.
Yeah, I know. But that's where some of the complainers were like saying, oh, they didn't get the context because they didn't translate it literally. I'm like, no, you got it.
But in English, would you translate it literally? I mean, I think you would get the subtitle.
You have to have like serious aphasia to not read the body language of what she was saying.
Yeah. And if you need that translated, she would be insulted as an actress.
Because exactly.
She'd be like, look, you should be able to get it through my performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was good. She was
well.
Good.
I mean, yeah. I mean, obviously, in the very next scene, we see her in. Oh wait, no, this was like earlier in the series. Sorry, but then in episode 4, she does actually hook up with him. So,
yeah, I found out I'm 2 degrees separated from the actress. So I'm like, yes.
Right. Oh, okay. There you all go. Right.
She's great. Yeah. And she's, I feel like at first she annoyed me incredibly and I'm like, oh God, I don't like you.
Oh, yeah.
But the more I watch, the more I'm like, actually,
you love her.
You're kind of scrappy.
Well, yeah, people, I mean, you respect people like her because she, you know what she's thinking. She tells the truth.
Exactly.
And she fights.
Mm-hmm.
She fights.
Yeah. And she's, I mean, you know, Doksu kicks her off the team. She's like, okay, F you. And then, hey guys, I'm now on this team. You need me. This is why I'm good at all these things except for the things that I'm not good at. And
exactly.
We're going to win. But like then as soon, yeah.
She's a template for like how to survive.
Right.
Like, in that kind of situation. And
you know, she's in there because she's been convicted of fraud 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. I forgot about her.
That's the thing she does. She does fraud. You know, at the beginning, Emma described her as, oh, that's the one with the child. No, she was making that up that she had a child.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I figured that out later. I was like, this is why it's a good thing I am not in the game because I would be one of the first ones dead. I just fall for everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which is how I would be in debt because I fall for everything. I would just give all my money away to people.
Yeah.
But.
Pointing out some other cultural things. The first meal they have is that what we call in Korea the doshirak, the yetnal doshirak, the old school lunchbox. Mm-hmm. There was some stuff that's in context that I thought was, I love this stuff. I love when they talk about, oh, this rice is all cold. Oh, I wish we could have, we had a stove around, as in the old Korean schools would have a kerosene furnace. And all the kids would stack their metal lunchboxes on top of that to keep it warm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like a potbelly stove.
Yeah.
Like in a one room schoolhouse.
Yeah. And those of you who are listening that haven't been to Korea yet, if you can go to a bar that has these things, these are some of my favorite things to get at a bar is.
Oh, it's in a bar. It's bar food now.
It's bar food. Yeah. You get a doshirak. You get a doshirak and it comes out the metal box and you shake the crap out of it.
Yeah. But just be careful so it doesn't spill out.
You got to be careful
because
I've done that.
Hold on to it.
I've done that before.
I've go splattered. Around the world. You just have to kind of go like this.
You have to squeeze it tight and shake it and then shake it and then shake it because you're supposed to mimic a kid running to school. They would shake it.
Oh, it's just like mixing already in their backpack.
Yeah.
So then it.
I see now.
Oh, so that's well, why.
Nobody
that's
ever
why
explained
we
that.
Have to
that's
shake
that's
it,
why it's what happens when you get the food guy on the show. Yeah. It's
because we didn't have to run barefoot in the snow for a mile to shake our own doshirak.
Oh, right. But like the ingredients, right? Like what that food guy, why is it so delicious? Like what's the combination?
Oh, okay. It's usually, okay, of course, it's definitely rice and it's usually kimchi. It's always kimchi, usually fried, stir fried kimchi. There's always an egg, usually some stir fried dried anchovies, myeochi bokkeum. And my favorite part is usually almost always there's, well, not almost always, only the rich kids had it, my wife said, was pink ham.
Yeah, like spam or the cheaper equivalent, which was the pink ham. Like
the pink
saying.
Ham, just the pink ham, which I love this stuff because there's so much starch filler in it. To me, it tastes like someone took a Southern ham biscuit and threw it in a blender.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because it almost tastes like a rice cake. Meat flavored rice.
It tastes like bread. You know, it's just like meat bread.
Yeah, you know it's not all like maybe like even 20% meat.
Yeah, there's only a little bit. It's a hint of meat in it.
It's
kind of just dough.
Just a little bit.
It's biscuit dough.
But they got the flavors right.
But it's fried an egg and everything. And I love that. And then, you know, everyone talks about the memories. And that's why I see a lot about this is everyone talking about childhood memories. Mm-hmm. And this is pointing out too, I think this is the other metaphor, is that adults aren't that different from children.
Yeah. Well, and this is where this is where they all learned it. I mean, obviously this is where it all starts.
Oh, and the big joke on another big joke on Honest Trailers is how the old guy wins at every game because he's old enough when they actually played outside. Do you remember when the kids played outside?
Right.
Oh God, guys, that's us.
What with like Nintendo, but
I didn't have Nintendo. I played outside.
But this is something I noticed too, is they were showing the similarities between the players and the workers, because later on when the policeman goes in to his dorm room and they give him their dinner, which is in a elementary school lunch tray.
The plastic thing.
It's the exact same. It's almost the exact same food items that's in the doshirak, except they added seaweed soup, miyakuk.
Oh, wow. Very observant. Yep. Food guy. Yeah. So basically say like there's like a very thin line between the players and then the hired staff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that was made incredibly honest at the end of episode 3, where the guy takes his mask off. Because like one of the players takes a hostage and puts the gun to his head, is like, take your mask off. And so the guy does. And then the guy's like, oh shit, you're just a kid.
Right.
Are you all kids? What happened?
He was management too.
Yeah. He was like, what on earth made you do this? And then immediately he's just like, pulls the gun to his own head and kills him. Kid turns around and the guy's like, you broke one of the rules. You took your mask off outside your room. Pachoo, you're dead.
And then. End of scene. Yeah. End of the episode.
Which again, that's why I'm just like, Juno is the cat with nine lives, because he keeps breaking rules and nobody shoots him.
Yeah. Also, but you notice this, another parallel with the players is the workers also have three rules. The players have three rules.
Right.
Workers have three rules.
Yeah, that's right. Don't leave your room after night. Don't take your mask off. Don't speak unless somebody superior tells you to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I rattled those off like that. Oh.
Wow, you know this stuff. Okay, the big question everyone wants to know about Han Min-yeom. Which orifice did she pull that stuff out, her cigarettes out of?
I know.
Which one?
Obviously.
Obviously.
I don't know, man.
Well, where do babies come from?
That's the orifice she pulled it out of.
Okay. I mean, I did. Okay.
As a woman, if you're hiding something, why would you stick? No,
I don't know.
You would put it up the place where you're used to holding things.
She was handling the condom a lot with her hands afterwards. So I was thinking, okay, if I was sticking it up in the backside, I wouldn't be touching it like that. Okay.
Well, and then also, like, you don't really need to use the kangaroo pouch like on a daily basis.
No, so
it could be used for storage.
Oh, that is true. That is true.
You have heard of tampons, haven't you?
Not in Korea, but yes, I have.
It's a thing even in Korea. Even in Korea, people wear tampons, and not just foreign women. Tampons are not like this alien thing. So,
okay.
But
I also found it interesting.
It was pretty big. Like it was
It was probably not completely comfortable, but possible, you know?
Yeah. And to think about her jumping around and doing all this acting and stuff, and she's had this thing stuck in her this whole time. Good work.
Well, I mean, if
she's done this before.
I'm pretty sure they didn't make the actress actually stick her.
But you know, I have an imagination, you know,
you're fixated on her. You do like her that much.
I was really interested.
You're fixated a little bit too much.
Yeah. To be her method acting director right now by proxy.
Okay.
No, I saw that. I was like, genius. Ah, genius. Okay. Yeah. If you're about to go into some place and you're like, I need to hide something. Makes sense.
Yeah, I know, but Sebyuk didn't smuggle using that method.
Well, no, because...
No, I'm just saying that. But I also thought really interesting as what device each one decided to smuggle in. What was their priorities
when
they were coming
Mino
in?
Mino is like lighter and cigarettes, which the lighter ended up coming in handy later
on.
It
actually came in handy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sebyuk, a pocket knife, which I'm thinking that's just like a given. If you could sneak in a weapon, obviously.
Which is also a tool.
Yeah. But she ended up losing it. Didn't she?
I think that Doksu ended up with it.
The other guy.
Yeah. Okay. Doksu ended up with it at some point, I think in episode three ish.
It was after the night battle. And then it was confiscated from him.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause he grabbed it and then they took it. Right.
Yeah. I also felt weird when she was looking in at them making the Dalgona, the sugar stuff. It didn't look like it was melted sugar. It looked like it was like,
yeah, because it was green. Like my note was like, what is the green?
It looked like
stuff?
Water. It looked like water. It looked like something.
I was like, are they poisoning them? That's why I like after any eating scenes right after that, I'm just like, waiting for people to start dropping dead. I'm like, they poisoned them with rat poison.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, what I was guessing is what they were trying to do, they were showing that the sugar's already melted and they were adding the baking soda to
Okay.
That's what they were doing, but it was just too, it was too runny to be melted sugar. So that was, that was me just nitpicking. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, that was, send it to the scenic But nonetheless, designer.
Again, Haminya.
Okay.
The acting in the acting in the bathroom to keep the guards out.
Oh yes, that was that was laughing. Amazing. That amazing. Was
the best.
Deserves an award for that.
Yeah, she... I know. That was great. As in, all of you acting students, all of you aspiring actors, take that and use it as your audition monologue.
Oh God, why don't you have toilet paper in here? I guess I'll just use the same.
She was actually, yeah. She does was seem committed. Like a theater actress.
She was committed.
With a lot of experience. That's so the way good, that she was doing that.
I loved it. I loved it. Another thing I'm going to bring up to Gi-hun, chocolate milk. More reason to hate him. Because he's such a spoiled little kid still. Don't you have chocolate milk? All right, anyway.
But that was a very important... reference to link why the old man was able to say, oh, you probably got hit a lot as a kid, huh? And he's like, how do you know? It's like, oh, because, you know, my kid was like that.
Yeah, because my kid was like that. Yeah. Okay, see, it makes sense the next time. Emma's going crazy right now.
Like, I'm like, dots are connecting in my head, but I'm not completely sure, so I'm just gonna keep it to myself until I finish. And but I mean, we do learn of an interesting subplot in the fourth episode with the Oregon black market stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting until it is not interesting anymore,
which I know. And that's like, and that's literally like the next episode.
Yeah,
which we'll talk about next week.
I'm gonna complain later. It feels like JJ Abrams and his mystery box things. He loves to make mysteries that are never solved.
All right, and then it just
he just abandons his mysteries, and there's like, these are plots that were just abandoned.
True.
Like, I mean, suddenly we've got like player 111 doing autopsies. Like, why is he doing autopsies?
Yeah, I know, out of the middle of nowhere. And like, it's like, what are they not? Are they so poor that they're having to do that? The workers and the soldiers, and it's only just workers and soldiers, no management, by the way. It's the workers and soldiers working in tandem. This is very Marxist right here. Doing this to sell organs on the black market. I mean, what are they really? Are they not paid that well? Really badly?
Well, I think they're basically, it's another statement where, like, if there's any room for some sort of like corruption or some sort of shadiness, they'll
take
it.
Okay, so they're kind of, they represent the underground crime mafia. Well,
yeah,
they represent the underworld,
the opportunism in Korea that
people can't
trust anything.
Yeah. No. You have a hard exit you have to do, right, Sean?
Yeah. Is it? Oh, it's 8.
Yeah.
Anything else that you want to say?
Anything you want to say? Because I think Emma and I could just continue.
Well, one thing I wanted to say was, especially with 3 and 4, because we saw the Talgona game, and then we also saw the tug of war.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Not the conclusion, at the beginning.
What bothered me a little bit in some of the media reports where people were interpreting, like, why is this so popular around the world? Mm-hmm. I wanted to get your opinion on this. Like, there was one kind of like analysis through line saying like, oh, it's because of the traditional Korean games are really appealing to an international audience. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, tug of war and like licking like candy. That is not the appeal. It's a whole fucking drama around it.
It's the suspense. But yeah. I do think the Dalgona thing, the Koreanness of it is appealing. I think some of the better Korean pop culture that comes out works best when it's unapologetically Korean.
Well, yeah, like, I think, like, as opposed to like, how does this make it different from like the Hunger Games or like Maze Runner? These Korean elements make it so uniquely Korean and like such a cultural product that totally comes out of Korea. Mm-hmm. But to say that that is what appeals to the international audience, I think, is just like looking at these old people who are just trying to be like, oh, geez, like what's so great about Korea from this thing that they didn't even watch.
Oh, Sean, this is what I've been dealing with this year.
Oh, God, it sounds like the Korean government.
Yeah, the Korean government promoting Korean food again. Oh.
And they don't even know what they're promoting. And so, like, they don't even realize, like, the actual part of, like, this element that's appealing to people is such a human element. And then you could totally tell, like, in this one Korean news report that, like, this interview that I saw, like, they were kind of forced to say, like, oh, it's also because of the themes of, like, love and friendship. I was like,
which is only in Korea.
No love and friendship in here. It's like the opposite. It's like hate and betrayal, honey. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Love and friendship.
That's like, who can I step on? How many people can I step on to get to the top?
Did she start talking about, Jong?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
They're just like, oh yeah, because traditional Korean games that people, I think, like now they want to know how to play a Squid Game. I'm like, they didn't even play the full Squid Game properly.
They hardly play the. No one knows how to play Squid Game. Nobody's playing. Like nobody did. Everyone's playing with Dalgona.
Yeah, and then like they're like, oh, how did all these like, you know, people from outside of Korea figure out the rules of Squid Game? And I was like, obviously, like if you had seen this, like they explained the rules right at the beginning. And then you also would know that by the end, it doesn't even matter. It was like, let's just pretend to play the Squid Game. And then boop, all the rules are out. Kill each other.
It was kind of like they explained the rules of cricket and then they just did rugby.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's a pretty good analogy. Yeah. Like they explain the rules of cricket and then I'm going to use that.
When you see the final, when they get to the Squid Game, that's how it is. Oh, you did?
I can imagine it, but just by that description, I'm like, oh God, I'm imagining this now.
Oh man. Well, this
anyhow, so I just thought that like that was like such a way to deflate this kind of thing. And so like, I don't think you should listen. Yeah. These people, they need to get a grip.
It's funny how all the players are coming out whenever something gets big. Remember when Gangnam Style got big, all the players come out to try to pontificate on it. We got the government officials talking about, and when they're saying this stuff, they're kind of implying, well, we are superior. We're higher and we're bigger on the hierarchy now. We are better than these cultures. They're doing that. Then you get some of the people who don't even live in Korea, but are somehow the cultural gatekeepers of Korea. But since they live in New York and LA, they have access to all the Vice editors and the New York Times editors. They're able to get their stories in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I keep getting so
they
ads.
Can, so they
the
can
New York
so they
Times
can find
Seoul
a way.
Bureau is hiring.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, so that they can use all, you know, their university thesis paper on colonialism, make that work into a New York Times article.
Yeah. Well, let them think what they need to think.
They're controlling the microphone. Yeah. That's what gets me. And then you have people like us, you and these white people talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know like how far like that voice goes these days, but I still just wanted to bring that. I was just like shocked to even hear that in 2021. I was just like, man, because you know, like they call it kukbong. You know, it's kind of like I don't know, like nationalistic OxyContin. Like people just drug themselves.
I call it cultural masturbation.
Yeah, exactly. So anything like that. It's just like, ooh, like this type of people need to be removed from the government.
It's the they like us syndrome. Oh, look, Gwyneth Paltrow likes bibimbap. They like us.
It's like, can you just take it to a therapist instead of just subjecting us to all of that?
I'll tell you a story sometime, Sean, when you have time, of my personal interactions with government officials. On
Yep. Wow. And I'm sorry that it had to be about something so intimate as food.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, Sean, tell us where people can find you.
You can go to thesoullight.com or to my YouTube channel, which is also The Soul Light, TheSoulIte.
Thank you so much for coming back. And
thanks for having me.
I love hearing your dulcet tones.
Thank you.
All right, so
we're
Emma,
gonna continue.
Emma, guess what?
What?
Sangha went to SNU.
What? Seriously?
They will not. I mean, this is like, this is another thing Honest Trailers makes fun of. It's like, and Song, and then of course they mispronounce all the Korean names. They go, and Sang-woo, the only man in Korea who actually went to college.
I'm not going to lie. With the way that they keep bringing up the fact that he went to SNU, it actually reminds me of my first date in South Korea back in, oh dear God, when was this? This is back in 2008. And I even like, it was, I didn't even know it was a date until right before the date.
Oh no, really?
Because I was, yeah, okay. So basically, I'll try and tell the story very quickly.
Okay.
So basically, I used to teach at an adult language institute. He was studying very intensively for a month with another person was entering.
I need to clarify, is it adult language or adult language? Are you teaching adults or are you teaching adult language?
No, just teaching adults. Okay. Just teaching adults English.
Okay.
Anyway, he was a student that I had for about a month. At the end of it, after his classes were finished, he invited me out to dinner. And I thought me and the other teacher that we split teaching him, I thought it was just, he was just like, I want to say thank you for being my teacher. He was like, how old was I at the time? I was 23. Mm-hmm. And, you know, had been in Korea for just a few months. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, so yeah, he's taking both of us out. And so I was like, cool. Yeah. Yeah. We set up place and time, whatever. And literally I'm like leaving the office to go meet him. I was like, hey, yo, Colin, you coming too? He's like, where, what? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, so-and-so, he's taking us to dinner to thank us for teaching him. He's like, I didn't get invited to this. And I'm like, oh. But it's too late to back out, and I'm too polite to do that anyway.
Yeah, because that's
not. So I go, and it's like this nice, like izakaya sort of restaurant, and he gets like the most expensive sashimi and like the most expensive sake. Of course, this is just all whatever for me because I'm just like a girl from Oklahoma who moved here from Fort Myers, Florida, and I'm just like, cool. I have no idea how expensive any of this is. I didn't even get to, I didn't get to look at a menu. He just ordered stuff. And I'm like,
oh, he didn't show you the price. Okay. Cause sometimes people like want to show you the price.
Oh no, he didn't show me the price. He just assumed I knew the price. Oh. And then like the conversation was basic. Cause he was actually just a year older than me.
Oh, okay.
And he had just graduated from university because, you know, with, or maybe he was 2 years older than me. No, he was a year older than me. Okay. Because, you know, military service and stuff.
Yeah.
But he was like, so I just graduated from Seoul National University. Again, remember, I had been in Korea for 6 months at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, is that a good university?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he just stares at me like, yeah, it's like one of the top three. I'm like, oh, that's, yeah. I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't know. That's really great. Wow. Yeah. Cool. He was like, but you understand because you went to a private university. And I'm like, I went to like a private Christian school in Northwest Arkansas. That's like maybe ranked 300 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
He was like, oh, well, I just got this job. I'm going to start working at McKinsey and Associates.
Oh, OK.
Yeah. No, but see, this is how bad I was. I was like, oh, is that a good company?
Oh, I mean, when you mention that, it does impress people. But then the people I know that actually work those jobs, I'm like, oh, God, they don't pay you.
No, because at the time, I legit had never heard of McKinsey and Associates before. I had no idea. I thought it was a Korean company. I was that much of a, yeah.
It's kind of like one of the bridges to help you get out of teaching English as a career here. It's one of the lifelines.
But yeah, so basically that was the whole day. I think he brought up SNU several times and I'm just like, this means nothing to me. I don't. Okay, cool. Good for you. And he's like, well, it's like Harvard. And I'm like,
no, it's not.
Okay. That's cool. I mean, I could never get into Harvard. It's hard. Have you tried to
get into it's hard to get into SNU, but once you get in, it's free coasting. It's like, Harvard, they try to fail all the freshmen in the first year.
But anyway, yeah. So every time somebody brings up Sang-woo and SNU, I'm taken back to that first date. Yeah, yeah. I'm just like, ooh,
I wonder if you knew Sangu. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I would not. I would not compare him. He actually grew up and became a pretty decent guy. Haven't spoken to him in a few years, but
it's all right.
I want to say, like, we last spoke about 5 years ago, and he's actually doing very well for himself.
When I was 24, I would have been just as unbearable. I'm sure.
I just graduated from so-and-so. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have been bragging all the time, and I'd be trying to show off all the time, because I think showing off is what gets women attracted to you, you know?
Except for when the women don't understand the references you're making, we're just like, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, do you like college football?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think this was maybe like about a year after I graduated university from Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah.
Just like, so, have you ever heard of the Razorbacks?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But yeah, you say it in the recap, but yeah, Sangu's an asshole.
He's an asshole. And like, even in episode 4, you kind of start changing just a little bit, because I mean, after like the whole umbrella situation, when Hyun survives, I think during that moment, you can see that Sangu is genuinely relieved that he got through.
I would say this, good acting on that one, because there's a lot of stuff going on. You can tell that his brain, he's thinking so much stuff.
Yeah.
Before the thing, when Gi-hun does choose the umbrella, he goes, "Are you sure?"
Mm-hmm.
But then he backs off and doesn't discourage him from doing it. Mm-hmm. And then when he's about to go, he goes, "Gi-hun, wait." And he goes, "What?" And then he goes, "Nothing." You just hear, you can just see the little
just, conscience,
the angel and the demon just fighting it out, duking it out in his head.
Yeah, it's like the ruthless executive versus the guy who maybe has a heart.
It's like the guy he used to be versus the guy he became. Yeah.
Right. And they're childhood friends.
And now that we're discussing this, it makes Sangu a little more interesting of a character on the second
watch. It does kind of, yeah. So in their childhood friends, they have this history, and in just the episode before that, episode 2, we see Sangu at his absolute lowest. He is literally committing suicide.
Yeah.
When there's that like knock at the door and the card slides under. So I feel like there's a lot, like, you know, I'm a little, I did get a little bit snarky when I was giving the recap, and I'm like, because he's an asshole. And yes, he was acting very much like an asshole. Mm. But I mean, I think the farther you get into the series and the more you kind of see Sangu he's starting to struggle with it, you know? And like in that moment exactly where he has the opportunity to tell Gi-hun, like, hey, wait, no, don't choose the umbrella. Like, he goes back and forth and he's like, never mind.
Yeah.
You know, but then I think in episode 4, when, you know, we understand like, okay, they have to be together as a team. Mm. You know, we see Sangu kind of starting to step up into like this leadership position. Yes, and I think it's kind of starting to hit him like, okay, yeah, ultimately I'm looking out for myself, but also I'm kind of looking out for these other people.
Yeah. You're starting to actually see growth in him, which is something you rarely see in Korean dramas. It seems like, yeah, you're starting to see a little growth in his character. Bring it up to Ali says when he gets his circle, when he goes to the circle and he's like, it
reminds me of the moon in my hometown.
Where I'm from. Yeah. It's like, well, cause no one else has the moon. This is what gets me, is like, they're trying to Forrest Gump him. Because a lot of the times, and I'm noticing it even more that I've said it before, is like he's always having this subservient smile, and some people have, some friends of mine, making this thing that, yeah, they're displaying to the Korean audience about how the migrant workers who learn Korean, but they also learn the Confucian hierarchy and how to properly behave, and they're doing it to an extreme, and it's supposed to show like they can integrate in society and they know their manners. And this is supposed to appeal to Koreans, but it's also, God, it's just,
it feels uncomfortable for us. It
feels uncomfortable because he's, it's the, Everyone else is serious, and then he's all smiley. It's just like Kim, Tony, and Itaewon class. Mm-hmm. Everyone's all serious. Oh, how are we gonna beat this guy? And Tony's like, hey guys, what's going on, man? Hey, you want to see my new bag?
Yeah, but I will say, and we'll get into this in our next podcast when we're talking about episode 5 and 6.
Yeah.
But even at the very beginning of episode 5, I think you kind of start to see that shift in him a bit.
Uh-huh.
Nobody's happy at the beginning of episode 5.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. He's starting to get down. That is true. But they were still kind of making him a little Forrest Gumpy. It's like he's a muscle.
Yeah,
this is the first time I figured this out too. Yeah. I'd see this time that he's also considered the muscle of the group.
Right. Cause when he was explaining the strategy, I just now caught this. Cause when they were explaining the strategy for tug of war, they're like, you want to put your strongest person in the middle. At the end. Oh, at the end. Right. Wherever that's Ali, right?
Yeah, that's Ali. But also before then, they just kept talking about, Gino's like, you had to see the strength this guy has. He held me up during the red light, green light. The strength of this guy. And I think they're trying to paint him as like is the dumb strong guy.
But I feel like
heart.
Yeah, but he's also gone. I feel like he's a little bit smarter than that because there is this is episode 5. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm thinking of some. He had some comebacks.
But he is a lovable guy, and I'm just there are just these little things. See, everyone sees this is such a Rorschach litmus test for everyone. Everyone sees something in there. Is the gatekeepers see something really with the translations? The government officials that Sean was talking about, they see something about how we can prove that our culture is better than everyone else. And then those of us who are in the society as the outsiders, we're very sensitive to how the outsiders are depicted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, it's like, damn you, Gian, I don't want to root for you, but now I'm somehow rooting for you. How did this happen? Like, that was me in episode 3 and 4 with Ki-hoon. I'm like, you're still an idiot. You still got yourself into this situation. But yet somehow I'm just like, you're pulling everybody together. And I'm like, what?
Mm-hmm.
And now, also,
I'm moving on. I'm sorry.
No worries. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out what. Okay, and then there's this little part that stood out to me is Sebyeok gives this look to Sangu like she knows that he knows what the next game is going to be. How would she know that he would know?
Wait, which one? The tug of war?
Dalgona? We're still talking about Dalgona. Or Sultang Bupki, because that's what was on the
paper. Oh, is that the actual name?
That was on the paper. Is Sultang Sugar, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sultang Bupki. How does she know that he knew? I mean... Yeah, I was kind of.
I mean,
wondering.
It could just be like her. Maybe she's just naturally suspicious of everyone.
She's being the cool hand Yoja, like I was saying before.
I could see maybe. I don't know. I could be reaching here, but you know, I imagine that if you're a North Korean refugee, you're just always kind of suspicious of people.
That is true.
And maybe that's just kind of like that kind of. Manifesting, you know, there she's stuck in this game where it's basically you win or you die. Yep. And so, and then, you know, this is before the bloodbath, but, you know, I would just, maybe she's just one of those people that's just always suspicious and is like, I sense that you are a person who holds your cards back. And you probably know something. She might not even, it might not even be that she knows that he knows the game. Maybe she's just like, you know more than you're letting on right now, whatever that could be. You know, so that could be interpreted in different ways. Maybe, yeah, it might not be that she was like, you know the game. I know that you know the game. It could just be her being like, you know more than you're letting on. I'm not quite sure what it is, but you definitely you're not being truthful about something.
Yeah. And then after that comes one of the most annoying things I have with Korean dramas with the editing tropes is the bonk bonk on the head flashback. In which, I mean, we have to remind everyone of what happened 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. In which they go back in time and they show where Sangu, well, he got the paper out, which we already saw him get the paper out before, of this bread, and he reads what it is. The only big difference this time
not Sangu, player 111, not Sangu.
Not Sangu. I'm sorry, not Sangu. 111. Yeah, the doctor. Sorry, the doctor.
I call him Dr. Deadbody.
Dr. Deadbody.
Okay. I think it fits. Dr. Deadbody.
Okay.
I mean, he is the one that's harvesting all the organs. He's cutting into dead bodies. He's Dr. Deadbody.
Yeah.
Dr. Deadbody. No. Yeah, no. It was like, they were just like, oh, wait, we have to, as if it wasn't obvious, even though we couldn't read what was written on the piece of paper. You know, it's like, oh, well, I wonder what was on the piece of paper.
Yeah, yeah. And then, yeah. They went, it's like, oh, we got to go to the back, bonk, bonk on the head, flashback. To remind us that he knows something that they don't know.
Though I will admit, because so much was going on, I will say, like, when they got to that scene, the first scene where we see him down in, like, the cellar cutting up the body, I was a little disoriented. I'm like,
I was disoriented too. It's like, why is a player out there? Why is there a doctor there? And they explained that later on, but that was like one of
the mysteries. I think I was messaging you and one of my and another friend while I was watching you. I was like, now they're doing autopsies. What is up with the autopsies?
Yeah. I was that's what I thought it was too at first. Yeah.
Yeah. It did. It took me a while to realize that it wasn't an autopsy, that they were harvesting organs. Cause I'm just like so all over the place. I mean, I think that's one thing about, I don't know if it's just me watching this series or if it's everyone and it was an intentional thing that they did, but you get so distracted by things.
Yeah. I mean, there was a purpose for the subplot, but the purpose is not what it looks like. It looked like it was going to come out to something really big.
It was just people being greedy. Right.
Well, no, it comes up to something else later on. And okay. I think in episode, what was it? Episode 5?
It's 5. Yeah.
Yeah. It comes on episode 5. I want to do this. I'm going to re-edit this whole part where they're getting the little canisters with their little Dalgona in there. Mm-hmm. And how they do it. I want to edit it with a canned laugh track.
Ooh.
Watch it again. And watch it. It's like some parts where the expressions on their face, and imagine the people were laughing. And then the big one, when Gi-hun looks at the umbrella and he looks up at the camera and he goes, I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
Cue the laughter. That was a Friends moment right there.
Yeah. But you know what? And they also, I kind of like how, cause they did this game similar to how they kind of did with Red Light, Green Light, where they offset like this really horrible thing that's happening, that people are getting shot in the head in the background, with this really sort of lighthearted music. And especially the part with like, he starts licking and stuff. I found myself, there were parts during that game where I was just kind of like giggling. I kept just like,
and this is like, what it was. And that's what
like,
the point
why
was.
Am I giggling? This is a horrible thing. People are getting shot in the head, but the way they contrast.
Cartoony. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way that they contrast, like the extreme violence that's going on with like the sort of lighthearted music and, you know, stuff. I was just like, this is really messing with my head.
Yeah, they were making the gunshots like in the background. It's like, so mm-hmm. It was just like part of the, it's like birds chirping as the gunshots.
Yeah, it's just like.
Oh, yeah. But focus on this. Don't pay attention to that.
Don't pay attention to the guy getting his head blown off behind you.
That's this atmosphere. That's the music from the Hearts of Space that we got around here. Yeah.
Yeah. It throws me off, except I believe, but we didn't get that with Tug of War.
No, but I think that was funny. As one meme I've seen is where Gi-hun opens up his Dalgona and it's a picture. It's a drawing of someone's butt and he's having to lick it.
Oh no. I mean, I'm not surprised because, you know, people. Internet.
Yeah, that's funny. I love that. Yeah. And also, we know at this point, this is where the one square head manager gets, he takes off his mask and he ends up getting shot. And this is mm-hmm. how Mr. Policeman gets his square mask.
He levels up.
Yeah, he levels up.
Yeah, but also because actually looking back, it saved him from getting caught at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because number 29, like the circle dude that he was,
mm-hmm.
was supposed to go down and help with like the body organ people
mm-hmm.
That's why, because you remember when he gets caught during the Dalgona game, the guy is like, meet me later, you know, to get some sort of chastisement. But then he goes down to like the furnaces and he changes his mask and he doesn't meet up with the dude later. Yeah. And then we find out the reason why he was supposed to meet up with the dude is because, not because he was going to get in trouble, because he was going to go down and help the dude with the organ black market thing.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm just like, you are seriously like the luckiest guy in the world, because at every single turn, he is like this close to getting discovered.
Yeah.
And he like within the first, I think within those two episodes, because it's only episode 3 and 4 that he's infiltrated the game. Right. Mm-hmm. So in just two episodes, every other, just like, how are you not caught? I mean, yes, I know they're all wearing masks, so you would think it'd be easy, but there are he has so many close calls. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. Junho, it's all the tension, man. It's all the close calls in here. Yeah.
This is why I can only handle watching like a few episodes at a time, and then I have to take a break. I can't do this.
Well, actually, I found myself shuttling. I run my the cursor around the bar, across the shuttle bar, just to get an idea of, like, I see, like, how many people are on this side of the play bar and how many people are left on this side of the play bar? Okay. I can handle this now. Mm-hmm. Especially episode 6 does that for me.
Oh, dear God. Like, that's what I keep hearing. They're like, oh, Emma, you're not even there. Episode 6 is going to fuck you up so bad. And I'm just like, stop telling me this. Yeah. It's just going to increase my anxiety.
All right, we just finished 3. Now let's start 4. We're going to go through this one fast.
Okay. Well, we've already kind of been talking about 4.
Yeah, we've been talking about 4. It starts out with everyone in the camera room, in the control room, and pointing out that they are intentional. They're supposed to look like video game consoles, but there's a type of video game console. I don't remember in America, but it's very common in Korea. It looks just like a Pac-Man console, but it's small, so you can sit down at it. It's lower to the ground. And that's what these are shaped like. That's what these are shaped like. If you go to some of the family friendly barbecue places and such, mm-hmm. you'll see little game playrooms for the kids, and they have the game room, and they have a couple of these machines where you sit down and you play. It's like a miniature version of an 80s arcade machine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what they were supposed to look like, and they had the buttons and everything. And I was writing down what the camera controls were, which were in English, and I was like, I'm trying to figure out where they got this from. Those were kind of like, they were more like soundboard controls that record that mute solo master
mm-hmm.
effect. I don't know what CONV was. A latch. I wasn't sure what that was. Then also everyone's going back to their dorms, and suddenly I noticed this later. Dong Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Duk-soo returns later to Min-yeol by sticking it up her butt. Another kid's thing. Come on.
Duk-soo.
And then of course, of course, we get another stupid bunk bunk flashback where Gi-hun remembers what Song-woo said before the game started. Like, we didn't need that. But this is what I don't like is about when they do Korean dramas, they really assume their audience is that stupid, that they have to hold your hand the entire way.
Like, we're going to forget what we saw 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do, but it just depends on how busy your scenes are. If you have like super busy scenes all the time, of course I'm going to forget what I saw 5 minutes ago, because I probably didn't see it 5 minutes ago, and I'm going to have to go back and watch it again.
Yeah, but then you see.
But these are scenes that we don't need a flashback for. We didn't because, need that. Yeah.
We did that. And then Gi-hun and an oil man come in, and you see Song-woo gives this look like he just released his bowels. it's like not worry. It's just like a mixture of nervousness and relief at the same time. There's so much going silently in that 2 seconds. You can mm-hmm. see a change going on.
Right. Well, and Kyun still has no idea that Song-woo knew what was coming and didn't stop him. And so, like, that's why I think you kind of start to see the growth starting to happen, because Song-woo's just
I don't know. I think he sort of suspected it, but then he just kind of like laughed it off later on.
It could be. And maybe that's Kewin's coping
it's like,
method.
Oh, you rascal. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe like that.
He could be one of the, well, I mean, I think it's obvious right now that Kewin doesn't like conflict.
Yeah.
And so instead, especially when, like, they're already in a high stress situation where they could die at any moment. So it's just like, you know what? Maybe now is not the time for me to sit down and have a heart to heart with my friend and be like, yo, why'd you try to screw me over?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just be happy that we all survived and let's just keep this team together.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, Kewin, I feel like, not maybe it was a little bit before that, but I feel like episode 4 is where we really start. I really started to feel like, oh, Kewin might just be the heart of this team. Like, he's the one trying to keep people together. He's the one that reaches out to Sabeok and is like, hey, you should join us.
Yeah. And he brings, I mean, he brought in Oil Man, you know, the old frail guy as being part of the team when everyone was kind of like, huh?
What are you doing? He was like, no, we got to look out for, we got to look out for each other.
Yeah.
And so, but he does it in such a buddy way. It's not like, and he does it in a way that's not like, hey, I think you're weak, I want to protect you. He's like, hey, you know what? We'll be the coolest team. We'll be buddies. Yeah. Join us.
Yeah. We'll
and he's like, hey, cool girl who likes to stand by herself. Like, I mean, he knows that Doksu, I mean, and because this happens like after Doksu kills the guy and they all realize like, oh, shit's about to go down. People are going to die in here once.
Yeah.
That's when he's just like, hey, because he knows Doksu's got it out for her. He's like, hey, you know, here's the deal. So if stuff happens, we're all going to meet at this bunk and you can come meet over here, hang out with us. Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. And she's like, nah. And she's just like, whatever, kind of blows him off a bit.
She gives the look that she always gives. Yeah.
Yeah. But then in the end, like when shit happens,
I wanted to back up a bit and discuss dinner.
Mm-hmm. Dinner.
Which I think I call it the spa meal, the sauna meal.
What, the egg?
The egg. Yeah. I mean, usually you have shikhae, but this kind of is what we call cider, which is 7-Up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With great Squid Game logo on the
bottles. As good as Sprite, but yes.
Yeah. 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 But anyway, to me, that seemed like a meal. And then I noticed like people are complaining about, you know, Doksu's complaining, is this all it? I almost killed myself and this is what they reward me with. And then Minyal goes back and gives them a whisper. And I thought it was one of those, hey, you want to fuck type of whispers?
No, was the one that came up with the, hey, let's just cut in line in front of other people and
because
get
that's
more.
Her thing is fraud. She does fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what she did.
And she did fraud and she's like a scrappy survivalist, you know?
And then those five people did not get their meal and we're like, what's going on? What's going on? And then that a woman comes out and tells on them. And, you know, on the playground, girls, snitches get stitches.
Well, no, because like the woman started it, but then the guy is like, oh, what did you do? What did you do? And that's the one who ends up getting killed.
Yeah.
Because it was a woman and a guy. They were like, the five people were all kind of like, yo, what's going on? But it was the woman and then the man was loudest. And the man's the one that ends up getting beat to death.
Well, he gets beaten to death. And I think that's funny is like when he's beaten to death, everyone looks shocked like it's the first time they've seen a dead body.
Yeah. I think it was because, well, I can kind of get that because where they're at is supposed to be kind of like a safe space.
Yeah.
They're like, this is the place where we don't have to worry about dying because we're not playing any games here.
Yeah.
And then suddenly somebody dies. So I don't think it was like the shock of the dead body. I think it was the fact that he was killed in this common area dormitory by another player and nobody did anything.
Yeah.
Because that you can feel that shift when it hits everybody at the same time and they're like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You can kill somebody in this room.
Yeah.
And not only are you not going to get in trouble for it, it's going to add more money to the pot. So they kind of incentivized it.
Yep.
And that's when everybody realized there's nowhere we are safe nowhere. At first, they were just like, okay, we only have to worry about these games. But that was the moment they were like, shit, we are not even, we can't sleep. Somebody's going to kill me in my sleep.
Well, they realize, I mean, no one realizes this is the next game. This is the next game. And I call it, I call it Playground Jungle. It's when the teachers go away and this is how the kids act when the teachers are out of the classroom.
I mean, it could be like the way I interpreted it. That was like, I feel like maybe they might not have thought, cause I didn't catch on that it was the next game until later, but this could just be me. I mean, I feel like just the shock of like, holy shit, a player killed another player and they're okay with it.
Nope. That was just the beginning of the game.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize it, but I mean, you kind of see it later on, like even after, again, kind of getting slightly into episode 5, they're like, yeah, ooh, are we going to be safe to sleep tonight?
Yeah, I know. And then Gi-hun is trying to protest against this and he starts yelling at the camera and I notice Frontman's looking out on his CCTV and I'm like, wow, the CCTV really like, it pans like there's a cameraman there. Mm-hmm. It tilts like a cameraman is using it. Wow. I
don't remember CCTV being that. CCTV is
so great.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm just kind of like one of those gullible watchers, but it didn't quite hit me that it was another game. Well, until you told me, because you told me before I figured it out in the show.
I just did too. I mean, I just figured that out on my rewatch.
For me, it was when like, looking back now, I realize I should have caught it sooner.
No, don't blame yourself.
Because before that, when Dr. Deadbody was down and was like, tell me the next game, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, just survive the night. But even at that time, it still didn't quite hit me that it was a planned game. I was still just like,
they knew
what happened upstairs and they know it's going to be a free for all tonight. It still didn't hit me that it was a game.
This is what I thought was dumb too. Did they really have to sneak the paper and the egg to tell him what was going to happen upstairs?
Couldn't they? I thought they already told him.
Or something like that. Okay, so what were they telling the game after?
I thought
that?
They already told him what the next game was because when
they gave him the piece of paper and the egg.
Oh yeah, that's right. Okay,
they could have just slipped the paper in his pocket. Why go through the trouble of somehow putting a piece of paper in an egg and cooking it and hoping it turns out okay?
Here's a great idea. Since you already have him down in a clandestine cellar cutting bodies up, why don't you just flip and tell him then?
Yeah.
No paper necessary. because they were like, survive the night. Oh, yeah, that's right. They didn't tell him. They were like, survive the night, find the strongest man, survive the night, and then we'll tell you. Okay, yeah. Because like I got confused because he went up and he went immediately to Doksu, and Doksu is like, fuck, you're not going to be on our team. Dude, what are you going to do? Yeah. But then he like bartered the fact that he's like, I know what the next game is going to be.
Yeah, that's how he barters that.
And now I get it. He was like, I'm not going to tell you unless you keep me alive. And it wasn't because he was like, because he didn't know yet.
Yeah. Now this is a detail. Like, this is a
keep
detail.
Keep me alive, and I will tell you.
This is a detail. I want to go back and try to check this because it seems to me the icons on the walls, in the dorm in the big gym. It's the gym. I call it the gym.
The gym. I go back and forth between common room and dormitory.
Yeah, it's the gym. It looks like a gym.
It's a gym.
The paintings on the wall change. I think because I do remember later on. In the show, it's actually showing the games on the wall. And I
haven't even noticed the walls. I thought they were just blue.
I've been paying attention to it. You see little icons and there's these little like scallop patterns with flowers, but then tucked away behind some of the beds. I wanted to look at this more closely. I was just trying to freeze frame it all. It looks like a stick figure of a person carrying what looks like a chair, holding a chair. Like they're going to hit someone. Someone tell me, okay, if you see it. I was looking for that too.
Okay, I'm gonna be paying more attention to the walls as I watch the rest of the scene. I feel kind of silly for the fact that, like, I mean I kind of had time to watch it today, but I had so much going on, and it was also kind of like, I'm not ready to watch it yet.
I also noticed this time during the big fight that Ali saved Gi-hun again.
He did.
Someone was about to hit him, and then Ali was on the bunk up above and knocked the guy down. And then Ali ends up with a big gun. It's like he has the rail gun of bars. I mean,
yeah, the big
strong guy.
Right, the big strong guy.
Yeah.
Wait, so, but it was it just Sang-woo, or was it Sang-woo and Gi-hun that saved Sae-byeol?
I don't remember.
Because Dok-soo got to her.
Yeah,
I believe.
Well, he had to. Yeah. And the sound effects they're using, over the top sound effects when they're stabbing people.
And I know Sang-woo was there, but I can't remember if it was only Sang-woo or if it was Sang-woo and Gi-hun. Again, the strobe lights, it's really hard to tell. I might have to rewatch that scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Again. And I was settling back. And that's why those listening at home, we started the podcast a little late, because I was settling back and forth between this, trying to find this stuff and figure out again what was going on. On my rewatch.
And then after that, it was kind of interesting, because I feel like the theme of episode 4, like one of the theme, like the obvious theme, was teamwork.
Yeah,
but it was also kind of names, because names kept popping up. Like it started with Junho coming up to Kyun and being like, hey, yo, have you seen this guy? And Kyun was like, we don't know each other's names.
Yeah, no one knows each other's names. Yeah.
And then immediately after that, we see the team Underdog.
Yeah.
As I call them. And I gave them that name right before I talked about them going into the tug of war. But yeah. I mean, I think it fits all together. When it was just the five of them, you know, as they're all just kind of sitting down in the aftermath. And I think I believe it was Kyun. Kyun was like, hey, we should know each other's names.
Yeah. I mean,
they go around they're
the equivalent of the lunch table I used to sit at.
Yeah. So it's like Team Underdog. Team Underdog. Maybe I should call them Team Misfit instead.
All the ones rejected from all the other teams. That was my lunch.
Actually, table. Team Misfit sounds better. So maybe the next, and episode 5, when I do the summary, I'll be like Team Misfit.
Yeah. Well, I mean they're misfits, but you know, Sang-woo went to SNU.
Yeah, but he's still a fucking underdog. So
But he went to SNU because he knows where Pakistan is.
Oh yeah, that's true, because we do learn that, because Ali is like, oh, I'm from Pakistan, and Kyun's like, where's that? Like,
yeah.
No, but
it's okay.
Yeah, but then we had like that kind of sweet moment where Il-nam forgets his name.
Yeah, that was oil man.
And then Kyun like covers up for him. It's like, you know what? I forget stuff.
Taking care of him so much. And this comes into play in episode 6, by the way. This is that's actually some growth going on right there. Mm-hmm. I think.
Well, and you know, because I think at this point, Kyun's the only one that knows that Il-nam has brain tumors.
Yeah, he's the only one who knows that, because he doesn't want to reveal, because that makes him even weaker in the eyes of the others.
Right, and they'll want to. He might be outvoted.
Yeah.
So I mean, and that's another thing. It's like, Kyun, oh God, now I'm rooting for you, because you're trying to protect everyone. It's like, why can't? Okay, so you can be like a good father to all of these people, but you cannot be a good father to your actual daughter.
Yeah, they say that in Honest Trailers. He's
like, I mean, that was my thing. It's like, okay, so you're suddenly thrown into like this horrible game where people are dying, and you can take care of other people then. But you can't take of your.
It's like he's written like how every writer thinks of themselves as. It's like a guy who can take a great caretaker, but a really bad dad. Mm-hmm.
Well, and like as we learn, like towards the end of this episode, once we get into the tug of war game, the real MVPs of this team, it's not Kyun. It's Il-nam.
Yeah.
Ooh. because Ilnam's the one that the old dude is the one that comes up with the strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then gives them their confidence boost.
Mm-hmm.
And then when shit goes bad, Songu's the one like, hey, we should do this.
He does the trick. He does how to trick them.
Yeah, he's like, I've got this trick. We should do this. And then Mino is like, fuck no.
Yeah.
Being the loud mouth that she is, saying it like it is. She's like, no, they're not going to do that. Wait, does Kyun step up and be like, let's trust him?
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah, so he does. So he's like the cheerleader.
Yeah, there's other things I'm looking. I'm actually pausing this many times, shuttling back. There's a little detail I'm looking for. I've decided I'm going to save this until the next episode. Just a little bit detail on one of the players of Tug of War. I'm looking for.
Well, and the next episode is probably the better episode to talk about it.
Yeah. Before then, something else. Oh, yeah. There's one thing. They don't really. I would agree that's really hard to do in subtitles and such, is they're trying to show that Sebyeok has a North Korean accent and she speaks with the North Korean vernacular.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that you're only going to pick up if you know Korean accents. And not everybody's going to know that. I mean, I can distinguish between like a Seoul accent and a Saturi accent.
Which I'm sure, yeah, it enhances it. But as opposed to what these articles are saying and TikTok videos are saying, it doesn't ruin the whole freaking episode that you don't know.
Dude, do you think a movie is ruined for me because a person is from Oklahoma and they have a Texas accent? That's the thing, like dialects and accents. I mean, I get it. If an actor gets it right, it's amazing and it's awesome. But I feel like there are some areas where you got to give a little bit of leeway.
Yeah. I mean,
might be kind of a leeway. I'm not quite sure how you're going to show a North Korean accent in English subtitles.
Newsflash to a lot of gatekeepers who don't live in Korea. Inside Korea, if you have Americans and British talking, no one can tell the difference. Most people can't tell the difference between the accents.
Mm-hmm.
Most non-native English speakers they can't. And I tell people what to look for when listening for the accents, and then they can pick it out. But even then, they're not 100% sure. It's difficult. Yeah. Okay, so next we have up is toilet sex.
All right, yeah, we're going back before toilet sex.
It's something about also highbrow Korean film sex has to be this way. It's usually like woman on top and they're sitting and they're going at it like that. It's gotta be Reddit style.
I mean,
yeah, because Old Boy, that was the sex in Old Boy, was just like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. I mean, at the moment, I was like, what? They snuck out? How does nobody? And then I was like, oh, wait, this is before Lights Out. That's how they got away with it, because it's not Lights Out yet. So as long as the lights are on, they're allowed to freely come and go from the bathrooms, I believe.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's how they, because like my first thought was like, how are they getting away with this? Why are the guards not being like, what? But then maybe the guards don't care. They're just like, you know what? These kids just survived. Let them have sex. It might be the last time they have sex.
I don't think they care about that either. I think they're still playing little games too. It's like the teachers left the classroom. See what happens. And after they're finished Minyo gives them a cigarette. Hell if Doksu don't share that cigarette. He knows. These are the little nonverbal things I catch on. It's like you expect in one of those things, like after sex, one takes a puff of the cigarette and hands it to the other one to take a puff. Doksu did not at all.
Oh, no. No, that entire scene, I'm like, oh, no, no, honey. No, 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 no. Don't believe him. Because yeah. he's saying he knows what she wants to hear. And so yeah. he's just like, yeah. it's you and me until the end, baby. Like, it's going to, at the very end of this, it's going to be you and I. We're the only ones that's going to survive. And we're going to take all that money. And I'm just like, sweetie, oh my God, you're smarter than this.
You saw with the cigarette, he was showing who had the power.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was just like, no, don't. Even though I was super annoyed with her and I still wasn't sure if I liked her or not, I was still like, as a woman, I am just like, please, darling, don't believe him. I mean, okay, yeah, use that sex or whatever to get yourself ahead, because this is a dog eat dog world. And I mean, if you're gonna die the next day, why not?
Yeah,
this is not something I would ever condone in real life. But I'm just
toilet sex. Oh yeah.
Just using sex to get ahead. No.
Toilet sex.
No.
Toilet sex is so gross.
Okay. Nope. Not gonna go there. I don't want to.
No, it's gross. Toilet sex is gross. We're going to quickly touch on the beginning of the tug of war that's in this part, and then we're going to wrap up. We get introduced to what I call Jesus guy.
So we're going to see more of him.
More of him, a one-dimensional character to make a point.
Religion sucks.
Yeah. And they use him as a step. This really, I'm sorry, guys. I know everyone's talking about how great the writing is, but, and this is not about the translation. This really reminds me of university script writing. I took playwriting classes in university, and it just reminds me of the first quarter, like how our scripts were, in which we were intentionally creating characters, and then we do political arguments between the characters and acting like that was conflict and that was character development. Acting like that was, it was like,
but it wasn't if you only introduced those characters specifically for that moment.
It was specifically for that, and it was, there's no depth to that. There were a few other characters we're going to meet later on.
We did meet a character who I feel like is going to become significant later on.
Who?
Number 240.
I don't remember the numbers.
Player 240. The other girl.
Oh, Ji-young.
I think Ji-young. Sebiok's like
other half. I love Ji-young.
I called her as like who I think is Sebiok's soulmate. I think I called her Sebiok's soulmate.
I think that summary. They would have been, they would be a great couple, great gay couple.
Whether it was like a gay couple or just best friends for life, whatever.
BFFs or toilet sex.
They're just like, soulmate can be whatever. And I'm just like, these two women were made to be in each other's lives.
They were great.
With that first meeting.
Oh, it is. That
first meeting. Oh. And she comes back and Sang-ho is like, you brought another woman? She's like, yeah, so what?
I'm so bracing for myself when you contact me after you watch.
I know.
Oh, it's good. I love Ji-young.
That first meeting between the two of them.
Just in the future, when we get to know her, it's like, I kind of want to watch her story rather than these guys' story.
It's like, forget those guys. This is the one I'm interested in.
I want to watch a show where she's the star, because I really like the actress. The actress is really good, and things are really good. But we do get annoying Jesus guy. A little bit of trivia is... oil man, I still call him oil man. Oil now.
Old dude.
The strategies he's giving are the exact same strategies the writer director used when he was a kid.
Well, that makes sense. Write what you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he obviously was like, hey, I freaking know how to win a tug of war.
Yeah. I was reading some Korean language interviews with him, and he was showing that a lot of the strategies people are using are the strategies he used as a kid.
Well, yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, and I also thought it was like watching that scene. I felt it was a really great scene. So you had the voiceover of Oil Man Ilnam 001.
Yeah.
Like telling them what to do and doing it at the same time. I was just like, They're gonna win.
And then, oh no.
And then you're like, oh shit, no, they're not. Oh God, no. And you're like, black.
Yeah, that was good.
I shouted so many obscenities at my screen before, like, after like 10 seconds, I remembered that I'm watching this on Netflix and the next episode is gonna automatically play.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm from that era where your favorite TV shows, you had to wait 1 week until the next episode came out. Yeah. So my knee jerk reaction just be like, you motherfucker, why would you do this to me? Oh my God. Exactly. And I was also angry because I was going to stop after episode 4 that night because it was already getting kind of late.
Oh, that's when you said you had to watch the first 10 minutes of 5.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, I have to watch the next, I have to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, you, okay, well, then after that, just, you can stop. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was like, I just have to watch. I got to know what happens.
Yeah. A little bit. It's not really trivia, but it's something a lot of people were questioning, including me. The announcer voice, if you're listening to the Korean version, sounds the announcer voice that explains the games and tells everyone it's food, dinner's ready and stuff, sounds very much like the Seoul Subway announcing voice.
Actually, you're right.
It is.
I didn't realize that until you mentioned it.
It is not her.
Oh, but I mean, I think it's just like that type of voice.
But she works for the company you work for.
No wonder she sounds familiar to me.
Yeah. So she does a lot of voiceovers for things. Yeah.
I have probably heard her before.
She's a voice you've heard before. Yeah. She's a top voice acting talent. Yes.
Okay. She's a voice that I have heard before. She probably works on my floor.
Possibly.
There's a room that I walk by every day when I go to work that says voice actor, actress room.
Ah,
that's where they hang out before they record stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I believe they record it on the floor where my office is. Oh, so
if you can get the guest pass to go in there,
I probably all I got to do. There's not like a keypad or anything. I probably just turn the doorknob and be like, hey, what's up, yo?
All the lemon tea you could drink.
Yeah, that too. I mean, what's his face? There's a comedian dude. He's got like the hair.
Oh, you're talking about like a big puffy hair and stuff.
There's a guy kind of puffy hair.
There's a guy TBS.
Kind of puffy hair. What's his name?
I don't know.
Anyway, we'll figure out his name before the next episode. Anyway. But anyway, I see him every day because he does a live radio show from noon to one on my floor. So I walk, I'm like, oh, hey, dude.
I know a guy like that too. It might be the same guy, but I see him walking out.
Actually, I should not say the name because then that would totally give away where I work.
Okay. And she's trying to keep it secret until she finally leaves where she works.
Until it's close enough to the end of my contract that I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to wrap up. Just remind you can go to our, remember we have a website, Seoul Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at King Sejong, on Facebook at Seoul, on facebook.com/Seoul Podcast. If you're watching us on video, you can get the podcast on any app where you can get podcasts on. We're on everything. Emma, you're on Twitter at Emma Kalka, KALKA.
Yes.
And I'm on Twitter at Zen Kimchi.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And we now officially have our own YouTube channel.
We do have our own YouTube channel. I don't have the domain for it yet, but we will once we get enough members. But don't worry about that. Anyway, guys, in the meantime, come in with your comments, questions about we're going to be covering episodes 5 and 6 next time. We're going to bring in some more interesting guests.
Yes, I'm excited about next week's guest.
We're getting some really good guests.
We
might actually have a little bit of a surprise guest coming up too. So
hopefully.
Yes. So hey guys, until next time, stay safe.
Bye.
The Seoul Podcast is a production of Zen Kimchi International, copyright 2021, under the Creative Commons license. Parts of this podcast may be used for non-commercial purposes if you remember to give us credit. You can contact us at sejong@soulpodcast.com. That's SEJONG at soulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at King Sejong and on Facebook at facebook.com/soulpodcast. For a transcript of this episode, listen to it again and write down what you hear. See you next week. Until then, may one day your likeness be immortalized on a pair of socks.